It's time for the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast, answering your questions from the General's Quarters every week, right here on VolQuest. Hey, good Thursday morning, everybody. Welcome into the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast. I'm Eric Kane, along with Brent Hubbs, Rob Lewis, and Austin Price. As always, our presenting sponsor, big shout out to Exterior Home Solution. That phone number is 865-524-5888. You can visit them online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. If you have a need for roofing, siding, windows, garage, want an addition, want renovations, all that and more, give them a call today. They've been local and trusted since 1999. That is our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions. We're going to spend the next 35 to 40 minutes answering as many questions from you guys as we can. As always, thank you for sending those in. Got a little bit late starts, submitting those, but we got plenty to get into. Right at the top, there were a couple questions about Lance Hurd in light of the UNLV situation, if this is any parallels to that, his injury, missing payments with, you know, the collective, all that. There were several questions, so I wanted to hit that at the top. Brent Hubbs, the latest, your understanding with Lance Hurd and you know, what is not happening in that situation.
Sure. I mean, listen, Lance Hurd's situation is about his ankle. It has nothing to do with NIL. It has nothing to do with a power struggle to try to get more or anything like that. This is, Austin, this is not NIL related. This is all about the health of his ankle and where that's at. This has never been about anything financial by any means with something Lance Hurd was promised, thought he was promised, or trying to get more or anything like that. That's not the case. Tennessee does contracts. Everything's on the up and up. There are no gentleman handshake agreements, right, AP? That everything is done, you know, with all the I's dotted and the T's crossed. And so it's not an NIL situation with Lance Hurd.
No. In fact, every player that has ever had a contract with Tennessee's collective, the Volunteer Club Spire, has been paid in full every month at the beginning of every month. No one has ever missed a payment. And they all, a lot of them get paid very handsomely. So, like, this has nothing to do with NIL. Stop with the madness. Stop with the conspiracy theories. He does have a hurt ankle. It still boils down to how much can he stand on the ankle? How much pain tolerance does he have? That's still what it boils down to. I mean, you know, is it this massively big, deep, high ankle sprain? I don't think it's that, but it still boils down to what he can physically handle at his weight on the ankle.
And, of course, there's injury reports coming out. There's one last night. There'll be one out tonight, Friday night, and, of course, 90 minutes before kickoff, Tennessee and Arkansas. More questions. Let's go to Mad Village Vol. The first one, what's the status of the Lindsey Nelson upgrades? Brent Hubbs, they're working over there. It doesn't look like a lot's happening still.
I drove by there on Tuesday, and I did see him digging some, I guess, holes, if you will, for down the left field line, where I guess you're going to see some canopy and eventually that part of the overhang, if you will, going in. But I mean, right now it's still mud and rock and dirt, and Pat Summit Road is still got a big trench in it, and there's a crane over there, and I mean, they're still moving the utilities. Now they have put in some pillars in the ground in front of the batting cages there on the right field line where those student seats are going to be in. So there's some movement there where those garage doors are down the right field line, I guess is the best way to describe it. So they're starting to get some stuff done there. But, I mean, you're still stuck with all the utility stuff that they're moving around right now. So it doesn't look a whole lot different than what it has looked like for the last 2 or 3 weeks or 5 weeks. But they are doing work. Obviously, they've had to work around a lot of mud and rain here. But they are working on getting all the utilities moved and getting to the point where they can go with some of the expansion stuff that they're trying to get done between now and February. It's going to be a tight, tight window this fall and winter. You knew it would be. Every day that you lose due to weather only makes that window tighter. And that's just the reality of where that project is.
And if you're in the area, head on a swivel because Tennessee's out there getting some work in for the fall practice slate. Yeah. How many more night games remaining on the schedule after Arkansas? Over, all under, 3.5.
Right, Rob Lewis? All of them. I mean, with the exception of UTEP, maybe all of them.
Like I told you and Eric somewhere this week, as long as number 8 is under center for Tennessee, they're going to be playing a lot of night games.
No. Certainly feels that way. I missed Denarius Moore. Overrated, properly rated or underrated. He's got a couple. He's got a list here of about six or seven. So I'm going to name out the scenario. You guys say overrated, underrated, or properly rated. Lane Kiffin's play calling.
Properly rated.
Yeah, properly rated. He's a good play caller. Anybody says differently hasn't followed him the last decade and a half.
John Chavis.
I think he was underrated by Tennessee fans for a long, long time. But then, I mean, and this is no slap at Coach Chavis. I mean, I think a lot of older guys in his position, I mean, I think the game changed towards the end of his career when he was at A&M and, you know, Arkansas later. But I think in his heyday at Tennessee, I think he was a little underrated by Tennessee fans.
I'll take this next one, then you guys jump in if you disagree. Arkansas's offense. If you look at the stats only, I would say it's overrated because you have Taylen Green third in the SEC in passing. Jaquindon Jackson leading the SEC in rushing, averaging, you know, whatever they're averaging, pretty good number. But in the last, you know, two SEC games, they've scored 24 points and 17 points. There's a lot of issues there on the offensive line and pass protection. So if you look at the stats on paper, I think it's overrated. Would you guys agree?
And Green is in the top like five or six or whatever in rushing. I mean, like, yeah, you know, he's up there for rushing as well. So, I mean, I'm with Eric. I mean, the stats, I don't think tell the tale. They move it a lot between the 20s, Brent, but they don't cash in with as many touchdowns as they set themselves up for.
Well, and I think, again, stats are, you know, there are a lot of people suggesting maybe Tennessee's defense is overrated because of who they played, and the stats look that way. I mean, I think when you look at Arkansas, they put up huge numbers in that first quarter against Oklahoma. I mean, huge numbers. Oklahoma State, excuse me. They played an Arkansas Pine Bluff team that would be a hellacious matchup between them and Kent State. I mean, that'd be a really good football game to watch between those two, to see what happens there. So, I mean, they have some overinflation in some games. I think the one thing about Arkansas is you don't want to let them get in rhythm, because when they get in rhythm, they can really click off some yards. But when they're out of rhythm, they're not that they struggle, and they've struggled in the second half to finish games and score, obviously, in the red zone as well. So, you know, stats could be what stats are. But I think that some of their stats make them look a little more effective offensively than what they really have been.
Georgia's secondary, Rob Lewis.
I'm not going to pretend to be an expert. I mean, I just watched them against, you know, intently against Alabama, like just about everybody else. But, I think they're pretty good. I mean, I'm not throwing many stones at Kirby's defense or the secondary over the last few years. And again, small sample size, because I watched them with a microscope against Alabama, like most everybody, with Tennessee being off. But, you know, I won't pretend to have watched them closely every game.
The Big 12, properly rated, I would assume. They're kind of exactly who we think they are.
Do you have a list of the new Big 12 schools so I know who everybody is in the Big 12?
Arizona, Arizona State, Utah, Colorado. I mean, you know.
UCF, they're in the Big 12, right?
UCF.
I was going to say SMU, but I think SMU's in the
SMU's
ACC.
SMU's the ACC.
Yeah. I'm so confused.
Eric, that's a slap in the face to Carson Newman. I'm just saying. That's I hear those, that's a slap in the face.
Tom Petty. We'll end on this one. Tom Petty.
As a musician or the song, but in after the third quarter at Florida, what do we mean, Tom?
I took it as just musician. Yeah,
you know, I don't know if I speak for people in mine and Hubbard's generation, but I could have when I was younger, when I could have taken Tom Petty or left him, like when he was, you know, contemporary. But as I get older, I like him a lot more as I get older and older. Now I would say he's, you know, I probably underrated him when he was younger. When I was younger.
Yeah, because now your options are Taylor Swift or Tom Petty. We're always going to choose Tom Petty.
I mean, I think Tom Petty's. I'm with Rob. I mean, as when you were buying the Columbia House 10 tapes for a penny deal that you got in the mail, he was not at my list of tapes to get. But as you get older, I'll say this for Florida, I do think what they do between quarters is one of the coolest between quarters deals. Agreed. That you see in college football. Everybody's trying to mimic that, which is everybody wants to sing along. That's the best sing along I've seen in college sports between quarters. I mean, it's better. No offense to Alabama. I think it works better than Dixieland Delight. It works better than what Oklahoma's doing with the Toby Keith deal. That deal's really cool at Florida. I give them full credit for that. It's got ties to Florida. It makes sense that way. And the interaction with the fans, or the involvement with the fans there, I think is pretty cool. It's a great
and you're singing about not backing down, right? Yeah. Like, you know, going to the fourth quarter makes it makes sense to the spot in an athletic event.
Yeah, it's cool.
Extra one here, Rob. Michael Bolton or Rod Stewart? Go.
And that's not close. Rod Stewart. Those aren't even like in the same. They don't even do the same genre. They don't even do the same thing. It's crazy.
I can just see Rob singing to Deb "When a Man Loves a Woman," though.
On to the next one.
Gator Dog, are the Big Ten and the SEC preparing to break away or just flexing to get what they want?
Yes. I mean,
yes, both. Probably a little bit of both.
I mean, I think they're flexing to get what they want. If they don't get what they want, then I think that moves a little bit further down the line to look at possibly breaking away at some point. Again, here's the challenge that they have. It's the challenge that college football has. Who's going to run things? You're not going to have co-chairmen. Like, you're not going to have – I mean, the SEC commissioner and the Big Ten commissioner aren't going to set up there and go, okay, guys, here's our 35 teams, and together we're going to collaborate and do – because everybody's going to go, well, we do it this way, and we do it this way. At some point, somebody has to take control, whether it's just those two conferences or college football overall, and until that happens, I'm not sure we're anywhere other than everybody screaming into a bucket about – you know, all the things that needs to be fixed.
Hold on a minute. Was the question just asked by Gator Dog?
Yes.
And Hub said screaming into the bucket, which is one of the great Gator Dog phrases when Jesse worked with us. Man,
100%. Awesome. 100%.
SevereVol 865, what has been the most rewarding moment of your career thus far? Austin, you want to kick us off?
I don't know. I mean, that's... You know, I mean, I think just working with you guys, and I don't mean to sound sappy, but we have a great team. We have a great team, man. We all pick it up. I mean, like, we don't have, like, Rob, I need you to call a recruit. Or Rob will text me and go, hey, you need some help in recruiting. Or, you know, Matt helps Grant, or Eric helps me, or we help Hubs, or Hubs helps us. Like, we work well together. Like, I mean, I'm not the baseball or basketball guy, but I feel like if I needed to pick up the phone and do something for you guys, I can get it done because, you know, I've got relationships in all sports, and I think you guys do too. So, you know, I think it's just the team we've assembled for me. It's kind of, I know it's a sappy answer, but it's a truthful answer.
Anybody else want to go?
Not after that. I mean, I look petty if I throw out a moment after that. I mean, I'm a little bit, but no, I mean, listen, man, I've done this for 30. I mean, the list of stuff is long in terms of moments, in terms of things that I've done that I'm proud of. But I mean, the biggest thing that I'm proud of is where we stand right now and what we do as a site. I think it's unique. I think it sets a standard for, coverage across all mediums, and looking forward to seeing what's coming down the pike next.
River Rat Vol, is culture, meaning fit, personality of a recruit or a transfer, even more important now in the NIL era than it ever was before?
Rob, I think this is interesting. I mean, I think this is an interesting deal because I think for me, it might be a different answer than it is for the basketball world. Or, you know what I'm saying? Because they have smaller numbers there. Does culture mean more when you have a team of 15 to 17 versus a team of 130? You know, I think that I don't know that it's greatly different, but it's just something everybody has to deal with, right, in terms of the NIL factor.
Yeah, I mean, I think the NIL, I agree with you, Brent. I mean, I think the NIL factor is a different aspect of it, but no, I mean, a couple of bad guys can ruin your locker room, whether it's, you know, no matter what the issue is. You know, I mean, I just think it's probably more, maybe fans hear about it more, but I mean, I think it's very important. I mean, I think it's always been important. Really important. I mean, at the top, I mean, you might be a top 20, 25 program on because you're really talented, but I mean, the best of the best, I mean, I have found out over the years they have good culture. No, you don't skate by with, you know, a bunch of fill in the blank you know, type of kids if you don't have good culture at the championship level.
Do you think everybody jump in here? Do you think, and Eric, you too, you run that baseball team all the time as well as football and everything else. I mean, is it more important in one sport than it is another, or is it just different because your numbers are different in all sports and your personality, baseball personalities are different than basketball personalities? Is it the same, but it's just different?
I think so. I mean, you obviously want to have the right fit personality in that clubhouse, in that locker room. You can have a few bad apples and kind of overcome it. We've seen that in years past, like with football, because you have 100 guys in that locker room, 85, 83 or 4 on scholarship. And if you have strong leadership, you can kind of ride that ship a little bit. You know, baseball, the numbers, you got, 37-man roster. It's going to go down to 34 at some point in time. It's a little bit smaller. And then basketball, of course, it's extremely small. So I do think it's the same, but I do think it's, to your point, I think it's different on the sports because of the numbers. And yeah, you're right. Baseball personalities are way different than football personalities and especially basketball personalities. So I think it's always important. I think it's always been a big deal to, you want to have the right guy because, I mean, also you say it all the time, right? Like you're going to go in the transfer portal looking for a running back. Well, this guy, you know, Tennessee might have a need, but you're not just going to go out and sign this guy because you absolutely have to if he's already been kicked out of two schools or whatever, if he has off-the-field issues, whatever the case may be.
Yeah, I mean, I think culture is important in everything. Baseball, football, basketball, golf. It probably matters less with, you know, college golf than it does college baseball. And it probably matters more, you know, in other sports than maybe it does college baseball. So I think each sport's a little bit different as far as like the weight of everything. I mean, look at us. I mean, like, you know, the culture matters at VolQuest. I mean, we have to overcome Matt Ray and his diva personality on a weekly basis. But hey, we're able to do it because we have good culture around us.
I'm tired of sending flowers to him every month, man. It's a little bit much, but you know, whatever to make him get a little work done works. But you know, I think for baseball, it's always been a bit challenging to me because of the partial scholarship. Agreed. You always had some separation there, a little bit like you have in the football and basketball world with NIL now. Now, the money's different. The magnitude of the money's different. But in baseball, there was always a guy who was a really good left-handed pitcher who was on basically a full ride, and the guy playing center field was getting books if he was lucky. So the culture there was always a little bit different to manage than it was in other sports. And again, I think Rob said it best off the top. You have to have – your culture has to be right if you're going to be successful. If you don't, it's off, it shows up. I mean, it shows up because you don't perform to the best of your ability. I know Florida State's not getting very good quarterback play, but, I mean, there's a lot of people down there has to be wondering about the culture in their locker room, what's going on, because they were supposed to be so good on the defensive line and so many other places. Maybe it's all just the fact that the quarterback play has been bad, but something has felt off with that team from week one for whatever reason that nobody saw coming.
And I've not seen – a roster makeup, right? But like, I'd like to know, like, how many guys have come from the portal that are on that roster? Because it feels like the notion is that it's a lot, and maybe it is. Again, I don't know. I've not looked at the recruiting classes to know exactly what it is. But I think anytime you live in the portal for your line share of your main group, I think that's especially when you have a overhaul like they did this past year. I think that always leaves you susceptible to, you know, this happening. You know, again, the quarterback's the great equalizer. If they're getting good quarterback play, you can mask a lot of other things. But, you know, I think it's more than just DJ, even though he gets all the blame.
And I think, AP, I haven't looked at their roster, and I don't know all the numbers, but I'd be interested to see this because you know, they do show up, you know, in the portal rankings every year. I think that it snowballs, especially like if you go in the portal for, you know, 12, 13, 14 kids 2 years in a row, I think eventually it has the effect that you don't have a strong upper class core all of a sudden, you know, after you do that 2 or 3 years. And I think that can show up in a big way.
Rocky Top Mojo, what would the line have to be to force you to take Arkansas, Rob? I think it's at 13.5.
Force me. I mean, this is different than the number would be like, I'm just not going to touch that. Right. I mean, that can we understand there's a window in there between where you would absolutely, man, Tennessee's is a lock as opposed to I'm just not going to touch that game to, whoa, I'm going to take Arkansas. And that number for me would probably be like 14 and a half to 17.
To where you wouldn't touch it or you would take Arkansas?
Well, I would take Arkansas.
Okay. Gotcha. Let's see here. Ernest P. Valrell. Is it a mistake to get Congress involved? Brent, you were talking about this a moment ago. Is it a mistake to get Congress involved in college sports, NIL? Government makes everything worse, but obviously there's decisions that need to be made and nobody's doing them.
Well, I mean, the problem is I don't think they're not in the weeds. They don't know all the issues. And I mean, if you're a state representative from the state of Alabama or the state of Georgia or Mississippi or Tennessee, and you watch college football on Saturday, did you sit there and go, man, this sport's got real problems, man. They got some real problems. I mean, I, you know, so then you get there and somebody tells you in a meeting, hey, we got to talk about college football because it's got a lot of problems. And he's like, I just watched Saturday look fine to me. You know, I don't see any issue because the entertainment value of the game is so good right now. How do you get somebody who's not involved in athletics to understand the issues going on in athletics? And I think you're asking people who are non-athletic people to make decisions. So
but I saw this headline about this kid at UNLV that didn't get paid. But forget about everything else you saw Saturday. There was this one huge headline on Twitter last week about UNLV's quarterback.
And a headline that died faster than it showed up, right? I mean, and it's, I mean, no offense to UNLV and no offense to the kid, but it just doesn't move the needle long term for anybody right now. I mean, it's all about what the playoffs are going to look like and how much money did advertise, how much more marketable is the game based on the numbers that you pulled on Saturday and all those types of things. That's unfortunately the reality of it, because I just don't think the average person sees what Danny White and ADs around the country and coaches around the country are dealing with every week.
No, they don't. And I would tell you that, you know, the only way you're going to see real kind of like headlines that do stick is if, you know, we get to November and somebody like Jalen Milroe says, you know what, I didn't get what I got, I'm out, and Alabama's number one in the country, and then it becomes a thing. Like the UNLV quarterback, no offense to him, just doesn't move the needle, as you said. So it's going to take somebody like that at a program that is, you know, in the playoff conversation or a lock to be in the playoff or whatever for that to happen. And let's face it, the chances that happens, that one of these bigger schools fails to live up to what, you know, was said, man, I just don't think that happens. I mean, like, I think that, you know, those schools are going to have the money to figure it out. I mean, I remember, you know, I think it was, you know, Chris Lowe that told me that, you know, when he talked to Barry Odom, you know, after Tennessee had, I think, beaten NC State, because, you know, Barry and Josh are pretty close, and he was just kind of talking, and he goes, you know, I don't think UNLV has anybody that makes, you know, over $100,000, you know, like everybody's kind of, you know, at that level. And I said, well, yeah, I can believe that. I mean, it's UNLV. It's not, you know, it's not Florida or LSU or Tennessee or Ohio State. It's just there's not as much money at that level as there is at the big levels.
Well, again, I mean, what program is going to let their star player walk in November if you're in the middle of the playoff race?
Nobody.
Okay. I mean, it's just, I mean, you know what I mean? It's like I saw where Lincoln Riley said they need to eliminate this redshirt deal so kids can't play three games or four games and then decide to hang it up. Well, there's talk about making it, you know, you have 5 years of eligibility. There is no red shirt. That's coming down the pike. Is that going to change anything? We don't think a kid now, instead of saying in the end of September, hey, I'm not going to play anymore, that kid who's not playing enough or is not happy about it is going to tell you in October, late the end of October, hey, I'm not going to play anymore. I mean, now, at the big schools, if you're in a playoff hunt, no. I mean, it's not going to change anything. But if you get rid of the redshirt rule, which I'm fine with, it doesn't eliminate people quitting in the middle of the season. that's only going to continue, and it'll continue at a later date in some cases if the four-year rule or the four-game rule is no longer in place.
It'll happen when, like, the team needs them in a key moment in November instead of at the end of September.
Right. Hey, we're trying to get eligible for a bowl game. I'm good.
Yes.
Several more questions to get into, but first let's get a word from our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions.
Get Neyland loud this football season with Exterior Home Solutions, East Tennessee's first choice for exterior renovations.
That phone number is at 865-524-5888. You can also visit Exterior Home Solutions online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. Local and trusted since 1999. All right, we'll go to coach_93. Is this the Saturday that Coach Josh Heupel opens the playbook and Nico has a statement game?
Man, I mean, I don't think it's been about the playbook. I mean, Hubbard, I'm you're going to tee off, and I just think he's just been concerned about pass protection, or at least to Oklahoma. Would you not agree?
Maybe, if we rephrase the question, is this the game where Nico goes off and has that, oh, he's arrived moment? He's done a lot of great things, don't get me wrong, but, like, kind of takes over that game, if you will.
I mean, does he have to take over the game? Are they in dire need of him to take over the game?
He hasn't had to so far. Yeah.
I mean, you know, I think Tennessee fans a little bit are having a hard time dealing with the fact that this is as balanced and as versatile as Josh Heupel's been on offense since he's been here. So instead of having to say to your quarterback, hey, I need you to throw for a bunch of yards, I need you to run the football 17, 18 times, you know, to win us a football game, they, to this point, have been able to do it in a variety of different ways. You know, they haven't had to say, Nico, I need you to rush for 100. Right? We're going to put it all on you because we're struggling here, we're struggling there. Now, if you can pass protect, if they could have pass protect against Oklahoma, he would have thrown for probably a couple more touchdowns and big yardage because there was stuff open in the play action pass game if they could have protected. Josh Heupel did the right thing by shutting it down, Auburn, and running the clock and going home. The NC State game, I can tell you, firsthand account, speaking with multiple offensive coaches, Austin, they firmly believed that once they started running the ball effectively in the two tight end sets, that NC State would adjust defensively, go heavier in the box, and play more man coverage on the outside and less drop coverage and say, okay, we're not going to get beat by 8 and 10 yard runs and 6 yard runs. We're going to stop that. And if you can throw it over us, then you throw it over us. NC State elected to never play that defense. They stayed in the drop deal all day long. And Tennessee
ran for 400 yards.
We'll just hand it off, you know. But they were planning on throwing it a bunch in that game. And then NC State said, no, we're not going to let that happen. We'll just take the beating in the run game. And they did. Because Tennessee's versatile. They can do a variety of different things.
Agreed. I think that's the biggest thing is the versatility. Josh Heupel said it, you know, that it's his most, you know, versatile offense. From a depth standpoint, from a playmaker standpoint, just different ways they can beat you with tight ends, receivers, running backs. And, you know, I think a lot of it will depend on how Arkansas defends Saturday. If Arkansas is willing to let them just, you know, gash them on the ground, Tennessee's just going to hand it off. You know, and if Arkansas, you know, packs the box, then I think they'll be, as long as they feel like they can protect, they're going to let Nico do his thing.
Yeah, Eric, the pass protection is the neutralizer to the versatility. If you can't pass protect and you got to go max protect, and then all of a sudden you are handcuffed in some of your playbook and what you want to do. If you can protect them, then you got a lot of different options, and it's a real challenge for defensive coordinators.
And yeah, I would say also, I mean, Josh is not. I mean, I think he's got all the confidence in the world in Nico, but he's not going to throw him. You know, throw it 50 times a game in a game where Tennessee is this much better than a team now.
Yeah.
I just don't think you're going to see really what the poster is wanting to see from Nico until you're playing Alabama or Georgia. Your back's the wall, and whether you think you can protect him or not, you know, you got to dial it up on 3rd and 8 three times in the second quarter because you got to keep scoring. I mean, nobody's going to put enough pressure on Tennessee for you to see what you want to see out of Nico for a few weeks, in my opinion.
I think sometimes we're forgetting, like, I mean, Tennessee got away with 2 strip sack fumbles in the first half on the road in an SEC game, and Lance Hurd didn't play, John Campbell didn't make it through. You know, we've talked about it before. You know, Tennessee's lucky to have Dane Davis on the roster. Hey, Saturday was not Dane Davis's day. It was not. Larry Johnson was in there the first time he's gotten to see true action. So, yeah, why put your quarterback and why put the game? It's like the Maxims. Why put those in jeopardy when you're controlling the football, at that point running the football, and then, of course, playing defense? There was just no need. It was Tennessee choosing to do that. Okay, Raleigh Vol kind of had that same question about Nico. We'll move on. Vol Nugs 1421. Will we be game day 7:30 ABC if we go 2-0 these next two games? I think we can all agree that yes is that answer.
Yes.
Kenny B says CeeLo recommended Herman's on the Nation this week. Any other recommendations in Fayetteville?
I don't know. I've only eaten at Bentonville and that Whataburger at like 3 a.m. AP. Or 2 a.m., whatever time that Whataburger was that we ate at. I guess that was technically still in Fayetteville. There's a Walk-On's in Bentonville. I've eaten there.
AP found it if there's there.
Otherwise, it's fast. It's only been fast food for me.
I've ate at Herman's. It's great. A great atmosphere. You know,
where are we going to go? We're going to be there a day and a half before kickoff. So what are we going to do?
Well, I mean, I don't know, Eric. Like, we'll just hang out and, you know.
AP's not been to Illinois. You're probably going to drive to the state line and take a picture.
That's only with the kids.
You can go to Mitch Mustaine's childhood home, maybe.
I'll be in Illinois on Tuesday.
I know what we will be doing Friday night. AP will be having my phone and his phone, and we're going to simulcast the TV in the hotel room, watch high school football as much as we can.
You know, I love that. I love it. Diamond Clear Media, watch some games, watch a little Joe Ossivet. They got a big game against Halls this week and Brent Hughes. You know, watch my boys, the Price Twins. They play Austin East this week. So.
I'm gonna Hubbard. If he's gonna do this name drop like that, we got to wear helmets. There needs to be like a warning or something. Like, you need a graphic, EC. Like name drop alert. Name drop alert.
That'd be funny.
A cloud goes across the stream and names just start falling out of it.
I love it. All right, let's see here. Eggsvol 47. It's obvious Heupel has a strong pulse for his team, and the players are run through a wall for him. You also see the Saban types that are always yelling at their players, but those same players would also run through a wall for him. What is it about Heupel that allows him to say so even keel, but still have structure and such a strong culture in the program?
Well, I think it's your staff. I mean, if you're going to be the heavy and the bad guy is the head coach, then you got to have some people on your staff that the players can go to and, you know, vent, circle back to and go, okay, coach yelled. I'm not really sure why he yelled. Will you explain to me why he yelled and go that way? If you're going to be the players coach, head coach, nice guy, or nicer guy, then you got to have some heavies on your staff that, you know, are boots in the rear end type guys too. So, I mean, I just think it's a balance of your whole staff. It's not one individual. I know that's hard to see because at Alabama, from the outside, all you ever saw was Nick. But I mean, it's not just him. It was the people around him and his staff that helped build the culture and the expectations there, which is pretty remarkable given the turnover he had on his coaching staff there.
Let me ask this. If we know who the heavy is on the defensive side of the football for Tennessee, Rodney Gardner, since Golish is gone, because I believe that was him, who's the heavy on offense right now? Or does it have to be Josh Heupel?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that there is, AP. I don't know that there is a real hard, edgy guy. I mean, and listen, Josh Heupel's got an edge about him. It's just different.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, I mean, it's not blood curling, red faced on the sideline, spiking a headphone. I mean, that's just not his personality. I mean, that's not what he does. That doesn't mean behind the scenes he's not intense and he's not doing things and he's not holding people accountable. It's just not flamboyant and visible. It's just like Rob. It's just like with Rick Barnes, right? On the sidelines, how many people are like, "Oh, sure, wish Rick Barnes would coach and do something. All he does is sit there. You know, when's he gonna?" Do that. I mean, go to a basketball practice and call me afterwards and tell me how that went, right? Like, everybody just kind of does it differently. But the ones that draw the most attention are the guys on the sidelines who are screaming at their assistant coach and, you know, looks like they're getting ready to lose their mind on every given play, right?
No, I'm just saying, for AP and Hubbard both, I mean, don't you think there's a little bit of a misconception that Josh is this rah-rah player's coach? I mean, if he needs to, you know, climb in somebody's kitchen or, you know, get in somebody's ear hole, that is 100% happening. Like, he can, not that he's, you know, going to grab somebody and, you know, pull them over the field by their face mask, but, you know, if there needs to be a confrontation on the practice field, that's happening immediately.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, you know, it's, I think he balances it. I think the best thing going for him, he's uber competitive. So, like, you know, he knows how to, like, okay, you know, let's have some fun, you know. But, like, the moment that he gets in any arena, whether it's, you know, a home run derby with the team at the softball complex or Saturday afternoon dialing up ball plays, that guy's got a burning desire to cut your throat. And so maybe he's not a screamer and a yeller, you know, when you see him on Saturday afternoon. But, you know, we've been out of practice, even though we're only out there for limited amounts. You know, I've watched him, you know, be very vocal with guys, you know. And so, I mean, I do think probably with Golish gone, he probably becomes a bit the heavy. I think Kelsey Pope's got a little bit of that in him. The rest, at this point, I've not seen enough to say that they could or couldn't. But that's kind of my take. It's just like Hubs. I mean, he presents a certain way, but, you know, when I don't get the green smiley face on the SEO, or Rob puts in the wrong picture or something for an article, he's like throwing his, you know, laptop at us and stuff. I mean, it's
common occurrence for sure. Do you guys remember the sidebar, but on this topic, do you guys remember the wide receiver at Alabama, Rob Easel?
Yeah. The guy who did the impression.
Yes.
He's a coach, right?
He's the OC at South Alabama.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Spot on. Just brilliant. I don't know why it was circulating the last couple of weeks. Maybe South Alabama or wherever he's at did something really, really good. I don't know offensively, but I saw that the other day, and that was so funny. Nashville 615. If Tennessee is going to beat Alabama or Georgia, what style of game do you think does it need to be? 2022 Bama shootout or more of a physical battle like this past Oklahoma game?
Score more points. I mean, whatever the game, whatever the life, yeah, whatever it
2017 means, or 52.
I mean, whatever it takes on, it takes on. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Obviously, defensively, Rob, Tennessee is built to play lower scoring games than they were in 2022. Not that they were terrible defensively in 2022, but they're built defensively this year to be able to be more comfortable in lower scoring games than what they have been previously. So I guess you could say, you know, if it's a lower scoring game, you would be more comfortable now than you were in 22 in either one of those matchups. But I mean, listen, it's by any means possible at that point. Whatever you got to do to get it done is whatever you got to do.
Yeah, I don't think you have a preconceived notion of it's got to go this way. Like I bet Kalen DeBoer didn't envision that's how Alabama was going to have to beat Georgia, you know, Saturday in that one. Tennessee's equipped to win in different ways. I mean, you know, if they were 2 years ago, if they were going to beat Alabama, they probably had to score 50 points. You know, to beat Alabama or Georgia, they don't have to do that now.
This next question from Nashville 615, I think, just my opinion, I think everybody's worrying about this way too much. So I'm glad he asked this. Does the wide receiver rotation need to shrink in order to be more productive? Essentially, if you have six starting wide receivers, you don't have two alphas. I think everybody's upset that Mike Matthews isn't going off or Brew McCoy's not going off, but they're playing five, six guys, and that's a good thing. I mean, that's a really good thing. If you have a good culture, AP, and a good locker room, you know, if everybody's getting a little bit and your offense is succeeding and you're winning football games, that's a good thing, whether to have, you know, one alpha and then nobody else. You know what I'm saying? I think we're making too much of that right now. Tennessee's got a good problem to have with a bunch of wide receivers that can play.
Yeah, I don't think anybody, to my knowledge, nobody's like upset. I mean, yeah, they all want to play. I mean, I had Tyree West. We taped Fall Club Confidential earlier this week, and he was out, and I talked to him about just like how that whole room has kind of got this unselfish nature, because they all want to play, right? They all want to be out there all the time, but, you know, there's only so many snaps, and Rodney's rotating so many guys. And he's like, I'm a huge cheerleader. Now, he goes, I'm ready to go back in the game as soon as my number's called. But he goes, like, I'm a huge cheerleader for my teammates. And I mean, I think they all just get along, and I think that's that way in a lot of those rooms. I think Tennessee's got a pretty close-knit unit overall, and it, you know, trickles down to the different rooms.
I mean, and listen, I'm not picking on Nashville 615. I think he asked good questions, good poster. But I mean, the whole preseason on this podcast on the mailbag, everybody was asking, are they going to play more than three or four wide receivers? Are they going to play more? And now they're playing too many. You know, it's just like the notion that, I mean, how many 300-yard games did Hendon Hooker have in 22? Anybody want to take a guess?
Florida, Alabama.
I bet Hubber already knows the answer.
Missouri.
I'm going to get out of the way.
Go ahead.
He had four. Okay. But I think if you talk to most fans, they would say, I mean, he lit everybody up every game. You know, it's like the LSU game. Everybody keeps bringing up the LSU game. 249 and two scores. That was his number. 249 yards and two scores against LSU in 22. That was his passing number that day. So my point is, in the Alabama game, Jalin Hyatt had a game we're not going to see, right? Like that's not going to be the norm, you know, the same way you're probably not going to go and play, you know, a team like Pitt and throw it 15 times to one receiver the way they did in that game. I mean, I don't want to sound like a coach, but every game is different. Every season is different. But as you get further away from 22, the fishtail gets a little bigger, right? Like everybody was 15 yards open on every single offensive snap in 22. It's what it's turned into, right? It was routes versus air for every game that offense was on the field. It really wasn't, but there were a couple of games where it was that way. Eric's doing a fact check on me right now. I feel like I'm in a political debate. Well, go ahead. Tell me I'm wrong.
Okay, here we go. It's popping up now. I was just looking at the other two games where he surpassed 300. You said Pittsburgh. That was one of them, and I thought it was Missouri.
He didn't. He threw for 355 against Missouri, 385 against Alabama, 349 against Florida, and 325 against Pittsburgh.
Yeah, okay. So,
and they needed all of those yards against Alabama and Florida and Pittsburgh. The Missouri game was a blowout. I mean, but those other ones, they needed every yard he had. But I mean, he had a lot of 240, 250-yard games, which were good days, which are kind of similar numbers to what Nico's throwing up, right?
Yeah. We'll get into a couple more. One more here from Nashville 615. Help us understand, AP, take this one. Help us understand the John Campbell knee situation. He's fine to start, can't play a full game. Also missed a bunch of games last year, but the staff didn't know about this entering fall camp. Kind of lay out his situation.
Well, he has a bursitis sac deal where he has to have it drained.
Did the staff know that going into this football season, I guess?
Yeah. I mean, it's something that came up in late summer.
Yeah. I mean, like it was not
the portal window wasn't open, guys.
Right. Yeah.
They couldn't go out and draft him one or pick one up off the waiver wire.
They knew about it when fall camp started, but they didn't know about it when the portal was open or to the point that like they could have any kind of surgery. So it's just one of those things where they got to kind of manage it. And I mean, I can't tell you, like, you know, can he play more? Can he not? I mean, I don't know. I don't know anything about it. I just know it's a bursitis. He's got to have it drained. You know, I mean, I don't know what the pain tolerance is on that or anything like that.
Rob Lewis, take this one. Big Orange Bradley wants to know 1995 Peyton or 2024 Nico.
Slow down is what I would say. I mean, slow down. I mean, if you go back and look it up. I mean, Peyton. Hubber, you may know this. I think Peyton had 28 touchdowns, 3 interceptions that year. I'm pretty sure about the 3 interceptions. And it was either 27 or 28 touchdowns. So I would say slow down. I mean, Peyton, you know, Peyton's a Hall of Famer. I mean, and also, yeah, I'd like to see 1995 Peyton playing in Josh Heupel's offense when Peyton was in his second year in that offense. I mean, I think you're comparing two different – I mean, I think Nico is fantastic. Great, but you know, until I see a little more than 5 games, I would probably take the Hall of Famer.
22 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, threw for 2,954 yards. He threw for, much more yards the next year, but 2 less touchdowns
and more interceptions.
Yeah, and he threw for a ton of yards, 3,819. Yards his last season with 11 picks, 36 touchdowns. Someone also down the list here referenced Peyton's offensive line, which was really good that year in 95 as well.
Are you going to take that one?
I mean, they were really – I mean, they were just good. They were great on the offensive line in 94, which is why they could turn and hand it off and let Peyton just kind of, you know, build as he went. And you just saw it happening in 95. I mean, that was the crazy thing about that deal is week to week, it was dramatically better. And they were doing things you just hadn't seen Tennessee really do. The creativity, a lot of the checking at the line of scrimmage. And I mean, I remember 95, everybody talks about the Alabama win in 95, which was obviously a great day. But I think arguably Peyton's best game in 95 was at Arkansas, in a game that he played early that season. He was going against a defensive coordinator named Joe Lee Dunn, who was known for just bringing people from all different places. He was master of confusion, and everybody was talking about, could the young quarterback handle this or whatever? And I mean, he just totally carved them up. And then he went and did the same thing to Brother Oliver in 95 against Alabama. I mean, we were just seeing a level of quarterback play that we had not seen at Tennessee. No offense to Heath Shuler, no offense to Andy Kelly. It was just different in terms of a guy directing the game at that position. We just had not seen that, which is what made it really fun to watch.
However, that's what I was going to say. That's what I remember a lot, because I can remember being super excited for Heath, and he was fantastic. I mean, just hadn't seen a guy like that play quarterback for Tennessee, but there were still, you know, they would throw it 16, 17, 18, you know, 20 times a game. It wasn't like the offense was wide open. I mean, he'd do two or three things a game. You're like, whoa. That's fun. I mean, and then Peyton, you know, within 2 years, it was like you were watching Troy Aikman. You run the Cowboys offense. And it was still the same coaching staff, same dudes. And it was just like, whoa. That's the biggest thing I remember is the difference.
They went from tight ends and running some option and a couple of two-man routes to they run five wide, you know, and it was like, it was like, okay, give Peyton the keys, you know, and once he got it, it was like, all right, Peyton's challenge and cut. Can we do more? Can we add this? Can we do that? I mean, it was just at a whole different level offensive football in that day and age. Now, how does it all translate? You're right, Rob. It's apples to oranges from what you were seeing offensively in 95. To what you're seeing in 2024, you know, in terms of how offensive football's played.
Let's end on this one. There's I copied down several questions that I thought were really good this week, but we can't get to them all. But I do want to get to this one. The Seven Maxims wants to know, how does the 12-team playoff impact the early signing period and the transfer portal window? It feels like a playoff team like Tennessee is set at a disadvantage because we're focused on winning a national championship, while Ole Miss, Auburn, Florida are focused on filling out their rosters for 2025. I think that's the case in baseball for sure. Every summer, Tennessee's in Omaha, and you got teams, you know, hosting kids coming in every single weekend, and Tennessee's trying to, you know, come back against Florida State to go and play North Carolina, right? It's a balancing act, right? I mean, there's so much you're already balancing in the month of December as college football coaches, and this is just going to add to it because Tennessee should be a playoff team, and that window will be open.
And that's why you have to lean on the Brandon Lawsons, the Scott Altizers, all those people to kind of, you know, do a lot of the vetting on, you know, okay, hey, we're probably going to need potentially this in the portal. Let's go ahead and be looking at, you know, these guys that have just went in, you know, maybe we can get them in for a visit this coming weekend or next weekend, whatever. And let's face it. I mean, if you're bringing guys in on visits around the time you are, you know, competing in the playoff, I mean, there's a real rub to that. You get the rub, like, hey, man, we're already there. You could be the missing link for next year. You know, players can kind of work on other players. I think as long as you have good structure around you, I don't think you will be drowning that time of year. Now, if you don't, yeah, you potentially could be drowning if you're trying to juggle the playoff and the ability to add to your roster for the following season. But I think that's why you just have to have good people around you.
Well, it's all about organization. You got 64 guys wearing coaching polo shirts on the sideline every Saturday. Use them all to your advantage and be organized in how you go about your business and, be organized with your time. I mean, it's not the ideal scenario for anybody. But the December portal window is not going to go away. it's not going to, I mean, that's, we're not going to eliminate that. And you just have to manage it. I tell you what, you're at a better advantage being in a playoff and trying to figure out how to manage it than you are if you're going through a coaching change.
Exactly. I mean, because if you're going through a coaching change, Hubs, let's face it, you can't go for a big name. The best thing that happened to Florida was Lane losing last weekend, because if Ole Miss were to drop another or so, they probably not going to be in the playoff, which means he's more go-gettable. If he's in the playoff, he's not going to give you the time of day until that's over. Well, by that point, all the stuff's closed potentially as far as the window.
The day is over and the window's closed.
Yeah.
It's hard. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, AP.
No, I'm you and I are on the same page. I mean,
it's not just your own side of it. If you don't have a head coach for November, December, your roster is, I mean, the Vultures are going to pick that thing clean.
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah. I think they've made it really hard to make coaching changes. I know everybody's clamoring for coaching changes, but I think from a timing standpoint, they're making it hard to make that move, because you can't roster flip. You roster lose, but it's the roster flip. And look, the spring window's closing, right? That's the vote, right? We're not going to do the spring transfer deal. Okay. Well, if you get hired after the portal window is basically closed, there's only a handful of guys you can try to go get. Instead of we can flip this quickly with the portal, which is what Josh Heupel did, they're eliminating that quick, or they're limiting that quick flip, in my opinion, with the way that they're squishing everything into December all at one time.
Well, I mean, like, if you're Texas A&M and you're hiring Mike Elko from Duke, then, like, all this is a moot point. But if you're Florida and you're trying to go out and you're trying to hire somebody that's going to really be a splashy hire, a flashy hire, more than likely that person's going to be in the playoff. More than likely, right? Like, the whole thought was, is Lane's going to be in the playoff. And maybe they run the table and he still is. But, you know, if he's not, then he's way more gettable come 1st of December than at the earliest 3 weeks later, 3 or 4 days before Christmas, or potentially even later than that if they were to win that first playoff game if they get in.
Well, and I think you throw, you know, even for smaller schools trying to go get assistance. You can go get the OC at a playoff team or a DC at a playoff team. I mean, is it realistic that they can balance both? I mean, nobody's going to bail on their team in the middle of the playoff, right? I mean, I don't think. Because it's not like you've got a month to get ready for games like you would the national championship game back when Cutcliffe left or when it was a four-team playoff. Now you're playing multiple weeks in December. You know, it's just, I think they're making it harder by putting everything on the table in the month of December.
They're pretty much, you're almost giving up on the next year. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're making it so hard. And if you like you say, Hubbard, they're making it harder. I mean, you've got to really want to do it, because, I mean, like, your roster is going to get decimated and you can't restock. So basically, if you're going to make that change, you better, you know, the upcoming year is going to be a desert.
Or you've got to understand, you're not going to go hire a playoff coach. You're going to go hire a coach who's not in the playoff. And that's not going to be a back the Brinks truck up moment to get that coach. That's going to make it harder to do in December to have those kind of moments.
Great show today. Great questions. Really appreciate you guys as always, and always appreciative of our friends over at Exterior Home Solution for bringing us coverage of this show. 865-524-5888, online at exteriorhomesolutions.com, local and trusted since 1999. Got a lot going on at the site right now. No more bye week for Tennessee. There's one later on, but back in the game week, Tennessee at Arkansas coming up Saturday at 7:30. Got recruiting coverage on the site right now. Got Rocky Top Roundtable, got injury reports, got matchup piece coming up tomorrow or later today. All that and more as we get you set for Tennessee and Arkansas right here at VolQuest.com with continual conversation and analysis on the General's Quarters. For Brent Hubbs, Rob Lewis, Austin Price, I am Eric Kane. Thank you guys as always. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday, everybody.
You've been listening to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast every week right here on VolQuest.